The Detroit Free Press usually names a restaurant of the year, a new or stellar establishment with great leadership and cuisine. This year, with restaurants hobbled by COVID infections and restrictions, the paper named instead a chef of the year. Chef Phil Jones is a longtime area chef who headed up major kitchens in Detroit and also started the Detroit Food Policy Council in an effort to tackle regional food insecurity. This year brought a great set of challenges for Chef Phil, as for all people who prepare food for a living. But he was in a unique position to organize restaurateurs around a mission of filling gaps in food security. His efforts became the collective known as Too Many Cooks in the Kitchen for Good. Chef Phil, welcome back to Stateside.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, congratulations. This is really cool.
Thank you. It's still a little shocking, but thank you.
I was going to say, the Free Press doesn't normally name a chef of the year. Were you surprised when you got the call that they were awarding this honor to you?
Yeah, I was extremely surprised, and I was actually surprised up until the day before. It really never even struck me that it was exactly what was going on. I knew there was a group of chefs that are being honored for being food fighters, but I never read the last line saying that it was leading up to Chef of the Year, and so I didn't realize it until Thursday evening when someone pointed it out to me. So,
oh, that's wild.
It's just shocking. It's a tremendous honor, but you know, the work I do is for the community. So, with or without the recognition, I'll still move forward.
Yeah, the work continues. It's been a wild, if not weird, ride for everybody, but especially for restaurants this year. When did you know that this was not the year that you were planning for as a chef?
March 11th and 13th. March 11th, we actually canceled the 10th annual Detroit Food Policy Council Summit, and was supposed to be my final summit. So that was a hard pill to swallow. Got real comfortable with doing it. Then Friday the 13th hit, and I lost all my work for the rest of the year. And that was extremely shocking, to say the least.
It's so interesting that food throughout the entire pandemic has been, I guess, sort of the best and the worst of it. It's been sometimes frustrating that we can't go to our favorite restaurants. It's been hard to watch the industry suffer. It's also been hard to get certain food items from the grocery store at various moments in the pandemic. And then on the other hand, you know, it is the thing that provides sometimes the most joy in a day is a meal that you've prepared or a meal that you've picked up from a restaurant. Can you talk a little bit about that role of food and where it's lived throughout the past year?
Well, it has actually shown itself to be what it is here. The pandemic was a tremendously clarifying event that gave us a very clear catalog of our issues inside of the food system. We know that emergency preparedness is not at the forefront of our planners. We know that we have a food waste issue that's still yet to be addressed. And we also know that the spirit of man, the spirit of community is strong, where people have come together in some bold and unique ways. And I, you know, I speak specifically to someone like Chef Omar over at Saffron d'Artois, who changed his business model to become a community kitchen to, to keep feeding people out here in the city of Detroit as, you know, the need became very clear. I see collaborations beyond belief, like between Miss Kim's and Layla's and the folks working together that you would have never seen working together before. I see community groups teaching people how to cook, I see community groups gathering food boxes. All these things are wonderful pieces of our food world, but we still have to recognize that we need to fix our food system.
Well, to that end, can you tell me how Too Many Cooks came together?
Well, I share a publicist with several restaurants and restaurant owners here, including Max Hardy, Stephanie Bird with The Block and Floods, Chef Genevieve with Bangkok 96, and the Cuzzos. And as the shutdown came, they all had food left over. And, you know, instead of throwing it away, they asked the question, what could we do? And are there people in need? So our publicist, David Rudolph, works with several nonprofits, and the connection became quite obvious really quickly that we could feed some of these shelters because there's a definite need out there for them to be helped at that point in time. So we wound up working with Alternatives for Girls, NSO, and a couple other folks in terms of feeding their population. Timing had it that some folks needed the food because their kitchens were going through renovations at the time. Some other folks, their providers didn't have food because of the nature of the emergency. So David asks, you know, what could we do to get food cooked and get it to these people? And it was all like all of a sudden the heavens opened up and people like Anthony Del Bain were posting that they needed to get rid of produce. Friend of mine called and asked me if I needed 3 semi-trucks worth of cooked chicken meat. So things just started happening, and working with partners like Food Rescue US Detroit and my organization, Make Food Not Waste, we partnered with other folks to distribute food boxes and rescue food in all kinds of forms and fashion. So Too Many Cooks kind of ran it all together through all that work. It was just a beautiful coming together of the food system. It spoke to the resiliency of Detroiters.
How did you manage the infrastructure to distribute this kind of food? Was it something that was already in place or that you had to make up on the fly?
Oh, we built the plane as we were flying it. And, you know, good-hearted volunteers, late nights, early mornings. There was no infrastructure. This is something I've been speaking to for quite some time here in the city of Detroit. We didn't have a plan for an emergency. We still don't have a plan for an emergency. We don't take into account that our first responders have families and friends that they care about that will need food when the emergency strike us all. You know, we don't think about even feeding them as they're fighting the fires and fighting our issues for us. And we don't think about our elderly and folks that are always in need. So, you know, there's still some work to be done. There's some considerations that we have.
You've been part of several initiatives to address food insecurity and food injustice throughout the years. How do you incorporate cuisine and the art of the meal into recipes when you're providing food for a massive group of people?
It's a balancing act between culture and efficiencies. We're trained as chefs to use our ingredients up to the very end. And so actually taking food that would be wasted in some situations, inaccessible in other situations, and taking them and using them up to the very last bit of their essence is a challenge that chefs embrace, and it's a challenge that food advocates embrace. And so it's just something that needs to be given more life, and it needs to become much more second nature to us here in our community.
That's really interesting. So like the process of running a kitchen and the overhead that's involved in food making also goes into the efficiency of distributing food on a massive scale.
Yes, definitely.
That's great. I read in the Free Press profile of you that you don't like being called a community chef. And for someone living in such a unique space or situation, I guess I struggle to find the right superlative to define your role. Can you tell me why you don't like the term community chef and perhaps what sits better with you?
It's not that I don't like the term community chef. It's the assumptions that go with the term community chef. The minute you talk about community and advocacy, the image of slopping food into a cardboard box on a corner comes to people's mind. And I still am an accomplished cook. I still am a leader of folks in kitchens. And, you know, I don't want the fact that I'm an artist too to be lost. I just want to be considered in my totality.
Right. Still just chef.
Yeah.
Well, as you said, you've spent a lot of time in some big kitchens and opened up some important restaurants, leading kitchens at the Rattlesnake Club, Colors, Fishbones. And you also founded the Detroit Food Policy Council, which has an eye on food justice and security. Can you tell me about how you view your role in the experience of food at all levels?
The advocacy piece was quite accidental. I went to Avalon Bakery one afternoon to get a loaf of bread, and Ann Perrault, the owner, said that there's an organization called Bioneers that has an annual conference at Mary Grove, and they wanted a quote-unquote celebrity chef or two to use local food to create an appetizer for a reception. I thought it would be interesting. I really wasn't a great big local food person then. Actually, I was quite the opposite. I was high-end ingredients, get them from wherever you could, whenever you could, however you needed to. And I didn't really consider the food system being as fragile as I found out that it is and have come to know what it is. Mm-hmm. So long story short, I wound up creating all the appetizers for this reception and doing all the food for the event for that weekend. And I fell in love with local food. I fell in love with the local food system and the people and the desire for a better world for us. Finding folks that know that nutrition and good health is something that we can take control of. And so from there, I just became more and more enamored with being a better chef. And by being a better chef, caring for my ingredients and caring for my community on a deeper, more passionate level became my focus. And so all of that has come full circle. And having now just launched a new business, which deals with healthy food, pharmacy food, and dealing with food access. Ironically, I am now working out of the actual building where my local food journey began. We're working out of Mary Grove Conservancy. And so this is a beautiful journey that we're starting, but it actually might be just a continuation of a journey for me.
As you've been feeding the masses and working on something that is of a unexpected and large scale this past year, what's kept you going?
The stories of people enjoying the fruits of our work, and I say our because I do this with a bunch of different people. You know, hearing that Thanksgiving dinner was delicious and the Cuisinart cookware that they received and the cookbooks and the recipes, all the care and love that went into all of that meant something to folks. They appreciated it. And it's something that they can carry forward in terms of the long-term physical gifts. But just knowing that people cared enough to take time to actually prepare a meal for them gave people a great feeling over this holiday. You know, it was hard for a lot of folks being separated from their families in the first place. And so just this having this little bright spot meant a lot to a lot of folks. And we had people write and call us about this. And that's what makes me feel better.
So as we begin to see the sort of light at the end of the tunnel and more folks are getting vaccinated, what's next for you? Where do you see your work moving from here now that your mission is going to have to change once again?
My focus is in the work with Pharmacy Food. We set out to change our world to be disruptive by using food and creating access to healthy food. And we, along the way, had to pivot because of COVID. We were originally going to establish brick and mortar stores, and when COVID hit, we pivoted and decided to go into the meal subscription business. And along the way, we developed a model that is based on building up our community of focusing in on the least of us. And so we're creating a menu that is competitive on a regular basis with fast food. Most of our entrees are like $8 to $12. But our commitment to community is such that students, educators, homeless, veterans, and certain other groups will have access to a discounted pricing, which will allow them to access our entire menu at 40% off. Hmm. So we're really focusing on making good food, healthy food, accessible to people in a lot of different manners. So through meal subscriptions, we are now piloting smart fridges, which are high-tech vending machines. And we've just been approved by MDAR to be able to put our meals inside of these machines. And so all you would do is take your credit card or your debit card, swipe the card, whatever meal you take out of the vending machine, once the door is closed, your card will get charged for it. But the biggest thing that we have here is that you'll still be able to access your 40% discount for those discounted tiers. You'll still be able to be assured it's going to be fresh, healthy, delicious food based on the diaspora. So you're going to get things that you wouldn't normally see. We feature products like Fonio, which is a West African grain, highly nutritious, something that is a part of the African food culture. You're going to get wonderful things like chicken curry. We're doing Moroccan lamb meatballs, things that are highly flavorful, highly healthy for you, and just really accessible and delicious.
And this is citywide or region-wide?
We are focusing in right now. We're going to focus in on our immediate community. Okay. So we are in the Mary Grove Conservancy. You can go online and order from us through our online ordering portal. But we're going to focus in on the nonprofits that are there. We may or may not know that the Conservancy houses the Detroit Youth Choir, Detroit City Lions. There's a after-school play program that's there. There's a lot of wonderful programming that's going on. So we're going to focus in on Mary Grove, the people on campus there, the Fitzgerald community, the Bagley community, and the surrounding neighborhoods. And then we're going to expand out from there. Our focus for the first year, we're calling it a year of service. And so we're kind of foregoing your normal path of building a business. We just want to highlight the community. We want to build relationships with people and to find out what you all need, find out what you want, and if you understand that we're on this good, healthy journey together.
Chef Phil Jones, thank you so much for joining us today. And again, congratulations. Good luck with the coming year.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.